Hello there, Dr. Neil Butchery here, food historian and chef. Welcome to the British Food History Podcast. Today I'm talking to returning guest and friend of the show, Mr. Ivan Day. And we are talking about the Leeds Symposium on Food History and Tradition. Before we begin, I'd like to thank everyone who's listened to the pilot of the new podcast called A is for Apple. It's an encyclopedia of food and drink, and it's hosted by myself, Sam Bilton and Alessandra Pino. If you haven't checked it out yet, go and have a look on your favourite podcast app. It should be there. A is for Apple. In fact, I also need to give another podcast recommendation. Nothing to do with me, this one. No, I'm talking about the History of England podcast, which is written and hosted by David Crowther. It's a very long-running podcast. I started listening to it when I had my restaurant in Levensew, Manchester, which is getting on 10 years ago now. And I've spent many hours rolling out pastry and making pies, listening to the dulcet tones of Mr. Crowther. There's quite a lot of social history in there as well, and he's very funny and engaging and erudite. If I ever need to swat up on a particular period of English history, it's where I go. So that's the History of England podcast. Please check it out. I've got some other news too, but I won't waffle on now. I'll do the rest at the end. Okay, let's talk about today's guest and today's topic. Yes, Ivan Day returns. If he's new to you, Ivan is an independent social historian of food culture, and he's also a professional chef and confectioner. He's also the chair of the Leeds Symposium of Food History and Traditions. Everything has a history, and that includes the study of the history of food. Now, we talk about how important the symposium has been to the study of this most fascinating of subjects. We talk about, well, a pioneer of food history study, C. Anne Wilson, who was a librarian at the Brotherton Library at the University of Leeds. And it was she, with Peter Breers, Lynette Hunter and Jennifer Stead, who together decided to create the symposium all the way back in 1986. We talk about this year's symposium, which is on the 27th of April, 2024. The topic this year being presenting the food of the past in museums and historic houses. Also discussed, the excellent work of Peter Breers, the subject and the speakers of this year's symposium, the social side of the symposium, including the excellent buffet, and why the Leeds Symposium is held in York, amongst many other things, including, as always happens when we get together, Mrs. Elizabeth Raffold. So here we go, the Leeds Symposium on Food History and Tradition with Ivan Day. Hello, Ivan. Welcome back to the podcast. It's very nice to see you again.
Good morning, Neil. Yes, glad to be here.
You're here to talk to me and tell us all about the Leeds Food and Drink Symposium. I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about it and why it was formed.
Well, the Leeds Symposium on Food History and Tradition, to give it its long correct name, has been going now for 38 years. It's a very well-established annual event. It originally was held in Leeds at the university, and that's where it gets its name from, because that's where it started. Mm. But in more recent years, for a couple of decades, actually, we have held it in New York for reasons which I will explain. Mm. In a couple of years, we will celebrate our 40th anniversary, which will be a very important event, and I'm sure we'll put something on very special for that occasion. The Leeds Symposium is a pretty unique event. There is another symposium in Britain, which is held at Oxford, the Oxford Food Symposium, which is a little bit older. Mm-hmm. It was founded in 1979. Our symposium emerged in 1986, which seems a long time ago, so it's been around. And it was started really in the University of Leeds, in the Brotherton Library. The special collections there has got two really important collections of culinary texts. There's the Blanche Lee collection, which was put together by a former wife of a mayor of Leeds. She collected cookery books just as a collector. Mm. And the other collection was a bequest from a man called John Preston, who was an alumnus of the university, who also collected cookery books. And both of them left their collections to the university library, and they're housed in the Brotherton as part of the special collections. During the 1970s, a young librarian called Connie Ann Wilson took up the post of assistant librarian, and she was basically responsible for the culinary collection. And she was so excited by it, because she'd never come across anything like it before, that she used it as a basis for writing what I think is one of the most important books that's ever been written on the history of food, which was Food and Drink in Britain Since the Stone Age to Recent Times, which was published actually in 1975. And there's a little bit of prehistory. And that places Anne as we knew her. She was a good friend of mine and of everybody else who is still involved in the symposium, but we sadly lost her about a year ago. And she was a driving force. Being based in the collection, she knew it very well. And of course, she had encounters with other people of like minds. For instance, the director of Leeds City Museums, Peter Breers, very distinguished museum professional, was constantly in and out of the library, got to know Anne very well. And then another member of the faculty, Lynette Hunter, who was very interested in early modern food culture, particularly from a bibliographical point of view, was also there. And a fourth scholar, Jennifer Stead, who was an art historian, but with a special interest, particularly in local food in Yorkshire. Now, these four people dreamed up the idea of having a symposium. And the first one was held in 1986. And they all presented papers at the symposium. The very first one was actually about sweet food in early modern Britain, and it was given the title Banqueting Stuff. And the proceedings were published by the Edinburgh University Press later that year, and it is a classic of culinary history literature. It's a great, great work, in fact, and it's set the pattern, really, for the following decade. Most years, the proceedings were published. The first few, I think half a dozen, were published by Edinburgh University Press. And then we moved on to the National Trust and Sutton, and eventually ended up with a publisher, which is very well known, Prospect Books, which was founded actually by the founder of the Oxford Symposium, but ended up in the hands of a person I've got to mention, who was Tom Jane, who basically became the editor of PPC, which is our important journal, is published. And Tom, for many years, kept on publishing our proceedings, even though they weren't in any way financially valuable to him, because they were often being very short print runs and with not too many sales. But he was a great hero in those days. And, you know, he published many of them. I was present, I think the first one I went to was about 3 years after the start of it. I'd bought the books and a curiosity. I thought, God, there are people who are interested in the same thing as me, because I started collecting cookery books and culinary equipment when I was 13. So I was a kind of, you know, rather crazy kind of teenager. And when I found out about it, I was so excited and drove over there to Leeds. And for a number of years afterwards, it was the highlight of my year. I live in the Lake District, so I would drive from the Lake District to Yorkshire along one of the most picturesque roads in England, crossing the Pennines, when all of the wonderful spring flowers were out. And it was such a wonderful, relaxing experience. And of course, we tended to hold, or still do, hold the symposium either in April or May, which is a wonderful time of year. So I've got these happy memories of these drives over, full of anticipation, and then a wonderful drive back, full of new ideas and meeting new people. At first, I used to hide in the back, just listening to these rather august people delivering, you know, these words of wisdom. And gradually, I kind of was even involved in writing a few papers. Mm-hmm. Over the years, we've had a number of chairmen. The first one was Anne Wilson. Mm-hmm. And she was chair for a very long time until she started to get unwell. and her role was taken over by another very distinguished historian and food writer, Laura Mason.
Yes,
who was chair
Laura
for
Mason.
A number of years, a great, great friend of mine. She's very interesting. She's embedded in the Yorkshire farming community. Her mother and father farmed in Yorkshire and in a place called Attingham. And her mother actually was a member of the English Folk Cookery Association. You know, you're talking about Florence White.
Yeah.
She was a great authority on dairy and particularly on Yorkshire things, you know, oatcakes. Sadly, we lost her too. We've been going for a long time now. Some of our personnel have sadly gone. So she was an instrumental character. And then she was succeeded by Mark Dawson, who is currently our secretary.
Yes.
I took over a couple of years ago as chair, so that's my current role. It's a little bit of a figurehead role. I mean, all the other people involved, and there are a lot of them, do most of the real work, you know. it's a wonderful organisation, and it's important. We've published some key publications over the years. Not every year we've actually managed to do that, but we're now self-publishing our papers. I think we're coming up to the fourth or the fifth one. But we now, I think thanks to your good offices, we've got contact with Pen and Sword, and they're going to publish our next set of proceedings.
Yes, Mark contacted me about that, and I wondered what happened. I heard nothing, so I assumed they'd just not reply. Oh, well, that's good to hear. What I love about these proceedings is they're so fantastically detailed. No detail is too small when people write their papers. But somehow, it's never boring. It's always really well written, really scintillating, and it's always got a view about context.
Yeah,
it's not just, here's a list of dull facts. Here's a load of facts that are relevant to understanding our past and to understand how we are, what we eat, how we eat today. I've got a couple of the editions here, actually. I've got the Moulded Foods. I'm writing a book about puddings at the minute, so that's coming very useful. And I've got Over a Red Hot Stove here.
Uh-huh.
Edited by someone called Ivan Day. I don't know who he is. Some charlatan.
Good job you don't.
But it's hard to really overestimate how important people like Peter Breers and Anne Wilson are to this very sort of niche part of history, which, you know, up until certainly before Anne really got her books published, it was basically poo-pooed as something not worthy of study.
Well, I mean, in the old days, I often used to think that food history could be a very popular area because it's so colourful and it covers so many areas. And I used to try back in the 70s and 80s to try and get like BBC producers interested in doing a series, but they would laugh. They said, what are you talking about? You know, is this about wenches with frothing, you know, tankards of ale? And all they could think of, it was something that was kind of a bit corny. It was Carry On Banqueting with Sid James and Hattie Jake. And you've got nowhere with those people at all. You know, in more recent decades, there has been a little bit more interest, but food history has not yet been done on television, not in this country. You're absolutely right about these symposium proceedings. They are a wonderful collection of books, you know, focusing entirely on English food. That's the difference between Leeds and the Oxford Food Centre. Oxford is much more international. We're not parochial at all, but we're very much focused on the food of these islands, which is something that has often been put down by people. English food is not very interesting. Actually, it is. The English food that most people are aware of is a kind of degraded English food that happened after the two first world wars. And it's got a fantastic history. And we can carry on producing these symposia forever, I think. It's such a rich vein of culinary interest.
No, it's absolutely fantastic. And the two symposia, the Oxford and the Leeds one, they're not carbon copies of each other. It wasn't just a case. It's very obvious it wasn't just a case of people up north going, oh, let's just do an Oxford one.
It's got a very different ethos and a very different mission. It's very obvious to me. It keeps itself small, it seems, on purpose, so everyone becomes closer knit. That's what it seemed like to me. So I've gone to the Oxford Food Symposium during lockdown, so it was via Zoom. That's the only way I could pluck up the courage to go, because it's too big. People like me, Ivan, I'd just be hiding behind a pillar the whole weekend.
Yes. I haven't been to Oxford for quite a long time. I used to regularly read papers there, actually, but I haven't been for all sorts of reasons. I had other things on when it was on, you know. So I haven't been maybe for 8 years, actually. And it is a very interesting gathering with some notable people. More broad in a way, you get restaurateurs and people in the food industry, food scientists, as well as historians. And it's a bit more glamorous than Leeds. You know, there's a fancy dinner and the rest of it. Ours is a much more humble occasion. It's very northern. It's very Yorkshire, you know, which I like.
Yeah, it is.
And of course, a lot of people are puzzled by the fact that it's called the Leeds Symposium when it's actually now held in York. But there's an interesting story, the reasons for that. We used to hold the symposium in Leeds University. We're always very good hosts. And then the health and safety issue came in, and they told us that we could no longer bring in food, which people had made at home. And one of the really important aspects of the whole occasion is our lunch, a buffet lunch, which is provided by all of the people who attend the symposium. And many of them go to enormous efforts and actually make historic dishes and then bring them in, put them on the table. And sometimes they're thematic. Sometimes they're linked very much to the subject of the actual symposium. And that was such a key element. And then we're told, oh, no, you can't do that anymore, you know. So we decided that this was so key that we said, OK, then we'll go somewhere where they will let us do it. And we've been holding it now for a couple of decades, I think, nearly, in the Friends Meeting House, which is right bang in the centre of historic York. So symposia sometimes come from America and all over the places, and they're nicely situated. They can explore the city if they're staying for a couple of days. And we've got one or two key places like Fairfax House, just about 100 yards away, where I used to do a lot of work. And we actually... over many years, I worked with Peter Brown, the curator there, and we did numerous exhibitions on food history with publications emanating from that little museum. And often they were kind of linked, semi-linked to the symposium, so people could visit the exhibition by just walking down the lane, really, and turning right, and they were there. The other thing is that the wonderful Castle Museum in York has got an incredible culinary collection as well. It's got a hearth gallery, the whole history of the kitchen, in about 100 yards long gallery, you know, starting off with medieval through early modern into 19th century, and ending up with, I think, a sort of 1940s kitchen. I don't know if you've ever been in there, but
I haven't been in there.
You must go.
I will go next time.
And of course, Peter Breers, before he became the director of Leeds City Museums, was actually the director of the Castle Museum. So he was based in York. His role in the symposium has been key all the way from the very beginning. And he's a remarkable man. I mean, I first came across him through his early books, which were nothing, well, they were vaguely related to food. He produced a couple of really important books on English country pottery. And he's written widely well away from food. I mean, he was, you know, an extraordinary curator of a number of historic properties. I'm sure everyone has heard of Gentleman Jack from Shibden Hall, you know. Well, Peter used to be the curator at Shibden. And before that, as a very young curator, he was at Clark Hall in Wakefield. He's totally grounded in Yorkshire. And he restored this wonderful Tudor house, well, mainly 17th century, with a bit of Victorian thrown in. And he basically absorbed an enormous amount of kind of history through his curatorial skills. So he's a real, really important key figure and is still going very, very strongly. And I must mention, as well as his historical research, he's a very accomplished artist and has illustrated most of his own books and most of ours, actually. There's always Peter Beer's line drawings that crop up, which give them an extra life, actually.
Oh, they're amazing, are his illustrations. I'm just working my way through his new book, Eating and Dining in Victorian Country Homes, Houses, I think it's called, isn't it?
That's it.
And yeah, I mean, obviously, it's just as brilliant as the other ones. And the diagrams, just the drawings, just bring everything to life for you. Because it's okay reading about things, but I guess any history, I suppose, is visual, really. You got to see what's going on. And of course, there could be photographs, but photographs don't actually always show the detail that you want to emphasize.
Exactly, yeah. They're really didactic, you know, they're there to explain things. People who have visited English heritage and particularly National Trust properties, many of the kitchens and dining rooms that they're seeing have been restored by Peter. I mean, I've done a few as well, but Peter is basically the senior when it comes to that sort of work. So he is, you know, a very important figure in the symposium, very energetic, still incredibly active, and, you know, working on paper. And you're going to read one at the next one.
That's right, I am, yes.
The next one, we've decided this, and we're calling it Presenting the Past in Museums and Historic Houses. And it will take place on the 27th of April this year, 2024, and it's our 38th symposium. You're reading a paper. I'm not this year, but I will chair a couple of the sessions. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting because Britain has now its first museum devoted entirely to food.
Yes.
Which is in Stowmarket in Suffolk. It's a museum that's been around for a long time. It was originally called the Museum of East Anglian Rural Life, and is very much an agricultural museum. It's got huge collections. It's got a couple of farms, a working windmill, a working watermill. And the new director of it, Jenny Cousins, is going to kick off the symposium and talk about her new... She's converted this old rural museum into the Museum of Food, which is a big moment for us. So she's going to kick off the day, and then we will have a paper by Peter, actually, who is a museum professional. That's his background. And we've also got Mark Meltonville.
Yes.
Mark is a well-known food historian who basically, background has been reenactment, and he's worked in the historic royal palaces, done a lot of work in America as well, in places like George Washington's house, and quite a remarkable man.
That was great. He's been on the podcast a couple of times, in fact. Yeah, we know each other quite well.
Mark is going to look at the role of our food being created in historic houses as a great instructional thing for visitors. You know, they can actually see equipment, you know, being used from the Tudor period onward. So he's very much involved in that. We also have a major museum professional who is retired, like Peter, David Everly, who has been the director of a large number of British museums which have strong connections to food. He was the director of the Black Country Museum in the Midlands and many others, and has written particularly on kitchens. And he's going to be talking about the role of museums basically in the interpretation of kitchens, which will be a very exciting paper. And then, of course, there's yourself. We're looking forward to you currently doing a residency at the Museum of Royal Worcester.
That's right. All in all, I think I'm going to be there for maybe 18 months doing various projects that are under the umbrella of one particular grant. Surprisingly, for a museum displaying foods that we eat or drink from, there's no food history element really in the museum at all. So that's kind of the low-hanging fruit, as it were, the thing that really needs doing. But also other things, it's a very small museum, so we don't have the space to, you know, do a big display.
Yeah, sure.
And we're also aware there's lots of people who can't get to the museum, so we've got to take the museum to other people and things like that. So it's quite interesting. And when I give the talk in April, I'm going to be right in the thick of it, of actually doing the project. So that would be interesting, and hopefully get some good feedback and ideas from some of the people at the symposium.
I'm looking very much to it. And, you know, the interesting thing is that some museums have adopted food historical perspectives, like the one opposite the across the road from where we held the symposium in the Friends Meeting House, Fairfax House. I worked there for many years because the director was really interested. And often the boss at the top isn't. You know, they're art historians, and they think that, I mean, in the past, we came across directors of National Trust properties who thought whoever would be interested in what servants did, you know. that's a quotation from a regional director.
Right.
Peter Breers and Pamela Sandbrook, who was another scholar who was presented at the symposium. We were at the headquarters at Queen Anne's Gate of the National Trust about maybe 30 years ago, and they held a symposium which was on servants' quarters. And Peter, myself, Pamela, one or two other characters, we presented our perspectives on this. And at the end, this gentleman actually stood up and he said, I don't really get this, he said. I just don't understand why people would be interested in what people did behind the Green Bay's door. That's servants, you know, people not interested in that. And of course, the National Trust has gone very much down the road now of realizing that the servants' quarters and the kitchens and the kitchen gardens are the places that a lot of people are really focused on, because they knew that Great Aunt Ethel used to be a maid of all work or a kitchen maid,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely,
in some big house. And they'd rather visit the kitchen than, you know, gloat over the Chippendale and the Gainsborough paintings in the salons upstairs. I mean, it's got an immediate contact with people. But a lot of the more old-fashioned art historians who ran these places didn't understand that, because many of them came from the same socialist class that the people who'd lived in the houses came from. And that's changed. It's much healthier now. So that's our theme for this year.
No, it's great. And I think you're definitely right. When it comes to regular people, I think they're much more interested in food and the people who were preparing and cooking the food than ever before. And I think it's actually the public who are a little bit ahead of academia sometimes. It really is popular, and a lot of people in academia are still fairly stuffy about the whole thing. Despite the fact some excellent books, like Anne Wilson's, all the way back in the 70s, right up until Penn Vogler and Diane Perkis in the last couple of years have written some great histories of Britain, and they're bestsellers. And yet, people think it's not worth looking at.
Yeah.
It's very odd.
Well, I mean, no, it's very much more on the horizon now than it ever was. I mean, we often used to think we were voices, you know, crying in the wilderness in the early days. But the actual creation of the symposium proved that there was a lot of people out there who had a very serious interest in it. And most of our publications are what you would describe as academic publications. They're scholarly. And of course, there are footnotes and all of those structures mm-hmm. that you get in more serious books. But they're not impenetrable.
No.
They're written for a wider audience. And some of them are very important, really. I mean, often they've covered a subject which has never been covered before. So a much richer literature now exists, with Anne Wilson's book being a pioneer in a way.
Yeah.
And also she edited a very large number of the early books that we produced. Her hand was on the rudder in a very steady way for many, many, many years. She's very much missed. As well as the people who read the papers and write the papers for the symposium proceedings, there are other people who are basically in the background who also deserve to be known about, because organizing this is quite difficult. And Mark Dawson, who was the chair for a while and is now our secretary, is the person who does most of the sort of central organization. But as well as him, we have other members, some of them food professionals or, in fact, museum professionals. Sarah Maltby and Vicky Sherman are currently very important. But some years ago, a local York scholar, an academic, a medievalist called Anne Ryecroft, she sort of galvanized groups of people who would go along to her classes to come and help just provide tea and food for everybody on the day. And we also, particularly at the beginning, during registration at lunchtime, there are a couple of book stalls there. Prospect Books yes. usually comes. Mm-hmm. I think Equinox is a new iteration of that. We've got one or two people who've even sold antiquarian culinary books there. So it's, and yeah. we've had John Hudson, the great Yorkshire-based potter, who makes reproductions of early cookware and serving things like posset pots, and the great, great member of our community. Where can you buy a posset pot? Anywhere in Britain. Well, you fork out thousands for an original one, but he's yes. got one that you can actually use, you know, oh. without it cracking when you put the hot liquid in it. I always used to look like forward to the social aspects of it, because I live in the north of England. And we've got people coming from all over the place, not just the South, but from Scotland, Ireland, and also more often than not nowadays, a few people from overseas. Mm. Just recently, we had some historians from the Czech Republic who came. I mean, it's really nice to know that we're linking up with other countries in a way. You know, I mean, we're not an international organization. We're very much focused on these islands. Mm. But other people are realizing, you know, that we've got a lot to say. And they're surprised when they think, gosh, English food? I thought it was awful. And they realize that in certain periods of history, it wasn't. It was really exciting and often leading the way.
Indeed. Well, yes, indeed. Living in the time we are now, I guess you can't blame some people for having that opinion, because some people think, anyway, that things don't change. So it's like, oh, well, this is just English food. It's overboiled sprouts and yeah. under-seasoned food. Whereas, like you say, it's some of the, well, I mean, we're biased in this, but, you know, it's the best food in the, well, not, I won't go the world, but in Europe, if you travel back to the right points in time anyway, it's the best food you're going to get ever anywhere.
Well, for me, you know, I'm very much focused in the early modern period, but as we get more female involvement in the writing of books during the 18th century, and I know this is an area that you've covered, yes. It becomes very exciting, actually, and a lot of the foodstuffs are not that difficult to make now.
How can people find out about the symposium?
Right, be practical about this. I think the best thing you could do yeah. is put up two links.
Yeah, I can.
To the website of yeah. the symposium, which I'm sure you will be aware of.
Yeah? I am, yes, yeah. of course.
And also to Eventbrite, mm-hmm. Where they sell the tickets for us. And, you know, people can just easily find that on Eventbrite, if you could check that out as well.
Links will be in the show notes for everyone, yes?
In my personal Instagram, I also give, you know, little profiles. I've done one on you, actually, a couple of weeks ago. And I'm going to do one on Dave Evely next. And then it will be Peter and Mark and Jenny, sort of every fortnight in the lead up. Just like to put that out there.
You've got a great Instagram account anyway, so it's just a very fun account to follow. So any listeners out there who don't follow, I'll put your handle in the show notes too, so people can give you a follow. Because this year's your last year of doing those classes at the School of Artisan Food, and seeing your pictures on Instagram, well, first of all, it's very inspiring to see these things being done. Yeah. And it also helps you, because the thing is, Ivan, is that you like to show your workings. you're not a magic act. You like to show people how things were done, and you know that's a pretty rare thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm very lucky, because I've been involved in this game since I was 13. Mm. I started collecting. It isn't just English. I got French, Italian, German, any language that I can figure out. Portuguese, Spanish. I've cooked from all those books, but I focus mainly on English. But it's a good to have the perspective of what was going on in other cultures, because we're a rather peripheral little kind of nation called Brexitania, you know, out on the Atlantic edge. And we've always been on the edge of things. We always think we're in the middle. We're not, you know. But a lot of our food culture has slowly percolated across the channel and been modified, you know. But that's really important to know. But many, many years ago, I thought, hang on a moment, these recipes in these old books, there are some of them you just cannot do unless you basically do them the way that they were prepared in the past. I mean, a lot of 19th century food particularly, you know, which is tortured and molded and turned into all sorts of complicated things, really. And the good thing about that is that a lot of the kit from that period is still around.
Yeah.
It wasn't that long ago. It's the earlier ones that are more difficult to get hold of. I mean, you know, you're a writer who has specialised in a biography and of Elizabeth Raphael, the great you know, wonderful cook who published a lot of recipes where, unless you've got some of the lovely little creamware molds that I'm sure she was probably an agent for, I just suspect she must have been, because she didn't make them, they were made in Staffordshire. But she has maybe a couple of dozen recipes which require these very specialist things, you know.
Like Fanny Craddock getting some, some backhanders to promote it.
I mean, she was just an entrepreneur. She needed to survive, you know, and she was good at it. Mm. But I mean, the fact is that I, at a very young age, started buying molds that were mentioned by Elizabeth Raphael. I mean, I was buying them in the late 60s and early 70s when very few people knew what they were. And, you know, when you find an original 18th century salt glazed fish mold or whatever, it's very different to the 19th century ones, much more elegant. Or a Solomon's Temple mold. I mean,
well,
you know,
that's the apex, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I've got three original ones, and I actually commissioned a friend to make some replicas. And I've got a present for you, actually. I'll give it to you at the symposium. You can have one of my replicas.
Oh,
okay.
Gosh, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ivan. And thanks again for gifting me that Solomon's Temple mold. I am still flabbergasted. Quite a surreal idea. I remember reading the recipe in Elizabeth Raffold's book for the first time almost 20 years ago in wonderment, and I can't believe that I'm going to be able to actually make one in the near future. Craziness. As promised, I've left a link to the website and the Eventbrite page should you fancy coming along. It would be great to see you there. If you do, come and say hi. One thing we didn't mention, actually, was that it's £25, which is an absolute barg. So, yes, 27th of April, the Leeds Food and Drink Symposium on Food History and Tradition, York. There's also Ivan's Instagram handle, in case you don't follow him already, because it's an excellent account. And there's links to the places that we mentioned, like Fairfax House, Castle Museum and Shibden Hall, in case you want to check them out online or in real life. I've also listed some of the previous episodes pertinent to today's topics, including Ivan's previous appearance, talking about 18th century dining, which is a very good episode. Oh, and also the books brought up, including C. Anne Wilson's excellent groundbreaking book from the 70s, Peter Breer's, and Over a Red Hot Stove, which was edited by Ivan. And it's a proceedings book that's still easily available, and it's very good. There's a brilliant chapter in there. I mean, they're all great, but there's a really good one by Laura Mason about yeasts and balms. And if you haven't already got a copy of my book about Elizabeth Raffold, the great 18th century cook and entrepreneur, well, that is out now. The Solomon's Temple in Flummery is, of course, mentioned. The book is called Before Mrs. Beaton, Elizabeth Raffold, England's most influential housekeeper. You gotta get a plug in while you can, guys. Oh, some quick other news before I go. An article of mine was recently published on, I don't know how you're supposed to pronounce this, cookbook, CKBK, about my love of eating and cooking with liver as part of their Consuming Passion series. So I've put a link to that. And of course, if this episode has fired off any comments, questions or queries, please let me know. We're over the halfway mark now through this season, so it'll soon be time for the postbag episode. So email me, neil@britishfoodhistory.com, or leave a comment beneath a post, or send me a DM on social media, Twitter and Blue Sky. I'm at Neil Buttery, but I'm also on Instagram and Threads as Dr. That's Dr. _ Neil _ Buttery, or go to the British Food History Facebook discussion page, which is at facebook.com/groups/ British Food History. Also, don't forget there's my Lent series of podcasts, which was series one, which went out all the way back in 2020. If you fancy listening along to that, there's a lot of you listening to it this year, which is great to see. Thank you very much. And thank you all for your continued support. I wouldn't be here unless you were listening. So thank you so much for carrying on, continuing to support the podcast. If you'd like to become a subscriber or to gift me with a virtual coffee or pint, please visit the website britishfoodhistory.com, go to the support the blog and podcast tab. But of course, you can support the podcast in other ways by telling your friends, writing comments, leaving a review, leaving a rating. 5-star rating, please. I'll be back later on in the month. Not quite sure of the date. Deadlines are imminent. But please keep an eye out. Follow the podcast on your favourite podcast app so you don't miss the next episode, because who knows when it's going to be. I'm aiming for 2 weeks' time, but we don't know. Until then, though, please take care and cheerio.